I wish to point out that only the most obtuse could fail to see the overall message of every reading, including the psalm today. Prophet, psalmist, Saul, Jesus, each one of them emphasize that to be a Christian, in fact, to be a human being created by God, is to live in a land of universality where there are no barriers, no exceptions to God's grace. Romans 11:29. The gifts and the call of God are irrevocable. Now, one of the slight reasons I chose the text is because I just love saying the word irrevocable. It carries within it, even as you say it, that powerful sense of God's ongoing, never-ending grace. The gifts and call of God cannot be repented of. They are about which no change of mind can take place. They cannot be taken back. And so, if out of context for a moment I speak to you, the message here is wonderfully simple. God never gives up on you. God never gives up on me. For his gifts and his calling are irrevocable. In just a few words, Paul lays down a foundation that cannot be shifted, a line in the sand that cannot be washed away, a point of demarcation that cannot be trespassed. There is, can you hear it in Paul's voice, a tough resilience, and there needs to be. For as he writes, he is dealing with a concept that, if left unchallenged, would wreak havoc on the Christian church and the Christian mission. He knew there was a battle for the soul of the church taking place. You see, and this is history just a little bit, a movement was growing within that nascent Christian community that was being nourished by misplaced feelings of racial and religious superiority. The newly converted Gentiles dismissed Judaism as flawed and relegated it to the trash pile of defunct religions. And as with any wild racial theorizing, they readily found a voice, and they found the voice in a man called Manes, founder of Manichaeism, who ferociously and virulently argued, quote, the religious religion be excluded altogether, Old Testament be rejected, inspired of the devil and his false prophets. There was, you see, growing even within the Christian community a sense that we have the right and the duty to discard a whole nation. But Paul says definitively, but the gifts and the call of God are irrevocable. Those whom God has made, those whom God has showered upon grace, those whom God has called, that remains irrevocable, and it cannot be taken back, definitely not by man or woman or human institution. Paul is fighting passionately for a faith that is embracing, inclusive, respective of all. But go back a few years before Paul, and we see a similar dynamic occurring. There is indeed nothing new under the sun, and so this wretched and sick inclination to claim superiority and nominate others as inferior occurs also in today's gospel reading. A woman, one strike against her. A Canaanite woman, two strikes against her, is summarily dismissed by the disciples. They use that awful phrase, sent her away. What gives anyone, especially those who have spent time with the Lord of life and love, what gives anyone the sense of superiority to be able to say of anyone, of any group, send them away? It is blasphemous. And so we observe this strange and frustrating ping-pong conversation of positioning between Jesus and the Syrophoenician woman. Perhaps even you feel he's being somewhat unkind to her. But he affords her respect. He calls her into conversation. And eventually he gives to this foreigner not only respect, but a place at the table. The gifts and the call of God are irrevocable. Those whom God has created, he showers upon them his graces and his calling. But then go back 600 years. And again, still we see there is nothing new under the sun. This wretched and sick inclination to claim superiority and nominate others as inferior raises again its venom-filled fangs in the pages of Isaiah the prophet and the songbook of the psalmist. And so it becomes crucially necessary for the prophetic word to affirm this: all foreigners will be brought into the house of prayer, which will be for all peoples. And for lyrical psalmody to insist that God's saving health is underlined for all nations. The gifts, the call of God are irrevocable. We cannot take that back. So whether it is in 6th century BC, AD 30, AD 50, AD 2017, we have before us the blindingly obvious truth that we cannot avoid, even with the most skilled of casuistry, that there is something about the human heart, yes, each human heart, that seems by default to elevate self and dismiss the other. And some of us poor souls actually go through a period when we denigrate not even the other, but we denigrate ourselves. Such is this default setting. A recent presidential tweet reached more readers than any other tweet of its kind. In it, President Obama writes, "No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion." And very hesitantly, I find myself at odds with this statement. Because it seems to me that today's gospel, the early part, which, by the way, we were encouraged to omit by the lectionary compilers, but we did not. The early part says it is deep from within us that these evil intentions emerge. We have to be radical and go to the root to deal with this inclination. It may well be that our default setting, our inclination, is not to hate a particular race or a particular religion. But I believe Jesus is saying, look intently deep within you. Confront and name the demons that seek a voice. This past week, I heard a phrase that struck a chord deep within me. And talking of cancer, a friend said to me, cancer works north in the body. And so does the cancer of dislike and dismissal and disparagement and distaste. It begins deep in our psyche, but then it works north to affect what we say and how we think and how we act. Friends, what we urgently need is an intervention of grace. The affirmative action of grace in our lives, individual and corporate and body politic. 50 years ago, I remember praying regularly a simple prayer for revival of grace. And I remember it to today. Lord, send a revival, but begin with me. It is our vocation to pray for our nation. It is our necessity to pray for ourselves. This past week, Michael Curry, presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, reflected on, and I quote, Charlottesville and its aftermath. He wrote as ever with passion and wisdom, not wasting words nor missing opportunities. And he concluded with these words. Where do we go from here? Maybe the venerable slave songs from our American past can help us. In the midst of their suffering, they used to sing, walk together, children, and don't you get weary, 'cause there's a great camp meeting in the promised land. He says, we will walk there together, and we will make this soil on which we live more and more like God's own promised land. God love you. God bless you. Keep the faith. Friends, let us with joy and with confidence and in community keep the faith. And resolutely affirm, constantly propagate, and long to experience this tremendous truth. The gifts and the call of God are irrevocable. Amen.